This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
Welcome, welcome to CBS Mornings. On this Monday, we begin a new week. I'm Gail King.
I'm Tony DeCoppo.
And I'm Nate Burleson.
We're going to begin with the coronavirus and difficult decisions faced by parents as the Omicron variant surges among kids, and some schools, including the entire Chicago school system, are forced to go remote. So take a look at this graphic. There's been a massive jump in pediatric hospital admissions for COVID in recent weeks. In just the last 7 days, the CDC says an average of 824 kids per day were admitted for the disease. Here's the tricky part. Those numbers include kids who were in the hospital for other reasons and then tested positive for COVID. Janet Shamlian is at Texas Children's Hospital in Houston, where there's been a surge in kids going to the ICU with COVID. Different story there. Janet, good morning.
Tony, good morning to you. This is the nation's largest pediatric hospital, and it is seeing a spike in COVID cases. The latest numbers are troubling. 75 children infected in the intensive care unit. Some of those kids are on respirators, and about a dozen of the infected are babies.
This is Jameson Rogers on Christmas Day. This is the two-year-old now, recently diagnosed with leukemia and fighting COVID in the intensive care unit of Texas Children's Hospital.
It was devastating, but it just seems like everybody have it.
Jamisha Kelly says she became alarmed when her son started having trouble breathing.
It had to be nerve-wracking for you.
Beyond nerve-wracking, because he can't tell me what's going on.
COVID cases are soaring here.
The volume is really disappointing. It's exceeded our previous peaks, and right now we don't necessarily see light at the end of our tunnel yet.
Dr. Lara Shekademian is chief of critical care.
What is it like when you see infants and children, young children in here with COVID?
It's difficult. There is still word on the street that children don't get sick with COVID. We see healthy children come in ill, and we see children with other comorbidities, as we call them, get very ill as well.
Doctor, have you had to intubate children?
Yes, we have.
Jameson is not on a respirator, and his mom says he's improving. The CDC says children with health conditions like cancer are more susceptible to complications from the virus.
What does he understand about what's going on?
I'm sure he don't understand anything. Just ready to go home, feet pointing to the door, ready to go home.
But in some of these rooms, going home isn't an option as children fight for their lives. Doctors say of those here who are vaccine eligible, almost all are unvaccinated. Nationwide, the CDC says just over half of children 12 to 18 years old are fully vaccinated, and only 16% of those 5 to 11.
I can tell you with certainty that vaccinated children do not get critically ill from COVID and end up in the ICU.
Doctors here say they need to focus on the most critical cases, but that's getting hard to do because parents are increasingly bringing their children to hospitals without severe symptoms simply for a COVID test. They ask, please don't do that. If you have a child who needs a test without severe symptoms, take them to a pediatrician or an urgent care, but the hospital is simply for the most ill. Gail.
That's a good note. Thank you very much, Janet. Now to an horrific tragedy here in New York City. And horrific is the word. At least 19 people are dead this morning after what appears to be the deadliest residential fire in the U.S. in more than 30 years. To make it worse, 9 of the victims are children. Officials blame a malfunctioning space heater for the fire, which also injured dozens of people in this building. Nancy Chen has more on the story.
Dramatic video shows New York firefighters lowering a stretcher to the ground. On it, one of the more than 60 people injured in Sunday's tragic fire.
Firefighters are trying their best.
Officials say the fire started in a two-story unit on the second and third floors. The flames only damaged the apartment and nearby hallways. But with the door to the apartment left open, smoke escaped and began to fill the entire 120-unit building.
Black smoke. I can barely see from me to you.
And it was very heartbreaking, especially when you see kids, like, fighting for their life.
While some got out, dozens were trapped inside, forced to smash windows for air.
Members found victims on every floor in stairways and were taking them out in cardiac and respiratory arrest.
About 200 firefighters responded Sunday, fighting the flames, evacuating survivors, and resuscitating the injured. Many continued searching in the smoke, even as their oxygen tanks emptied, according to Mayor Eric Adams.
This is a horrific, horrific, painful moment for the city of New York. This is going to be one of the worst fires that we have witnessed during modern times.
City officials say that the children killed in this fire were all under the age of 16. 18 people remain hospitalized this morning. Now, some residents say that at first they ignored the sound of smoke alarms because false alarms are common in their building, Nate.
Thoughts and prayers with those families. Nancy, thank you. Now let's turn to Australia, where tennis superstar Novak Djokovic is out of detention after a judge ruled he can have a visa allowing him to play in the upcoming Australian Open. The judge agreed that organizers gave the world's number one tennis player a proper medical exemption to play in this year's Australian Open, and that's an exemption to the country's COVID laws. Roxana Saberi reports on a decision that still could be overruled by immigration officials.
Fans of the world's top men's tennis star erupted into cheers moments after his legal victory. After an hours-long remote hearing, the judge swiftly ordered the government to restore Novak Djokovic's visa, which it had canceled when he landed. According to a transcript, Djokovic had told a border official he wasn't vaccinated and that, quote, they've allowed to have the medical exemption for the COVID vaccination. I applied. They approved. I just really don't know what else do you want me to say? The judge appeared to agree, asking, what more could this man have done? The government had argued prior infection is not a valid reason to delay vaccination.
Rules are rules. And there are no special cases.
The possibility that Djokovic may be playing by different rules outraged some Australians who have lived under some of the world's toughest COVID restrictions. Adding to the controversy, Djokovic said he'd tested positive on December 16th, though he appeared unmasked at events in the following days.
How well do you think he's going to play after all of this?
He's going to be very angry, very fired up. He's going to want to win, and he always performs very well in Australia.
But Djokovic might not even get to that stage. The Serbian athlete may still be deported. The government could decide to cancel his visa again tomorrow. The Australian Open is set to begin a week from today. Tony?
We shall see. Roxana, thank you very much. Staying overseas, American and Russian diplomats are meeting in Geneva, Switzerland this morning to try to defuse a potential military showdown in Ukraine. The U.S. is worried that Russia could invade its neighbor the way it did back in 2014 when Russia seized the Crimean peninsula. Holly Williams is visiting the frontier in eastern Ukraine, speaking to military leaders who are preparing for war and hoping to prevent another armed takeover.
On Ukraine's frozen front line, we trekked through the icy trenches that slice this country in two. Ukraine is an American ally, fighting a bloody Russian-backed rebellion since 2014. More than 14,000 have been reported killed.
Don't stay here a long time.
Commander Andriy is a 22-year military veteran, and he's worried.
Very big possibility.
A very big possibility
that
the Russians will invade.
Yes.
This winter, Russia has massed up to 100,000 troops along Ukraine's border.
Some believe a Russian ground invasion, moving in tanks and artillery, is unlikely until the ground here freezes over. But here in the trenches, they've told us, it could happen at any time.
President Vladimir Putin claims Russia's a victim of Western aggression, and he's demanding security guarantees from America and its NATO allies, including removing NATO troops from much of Eastern Europe.
I think that Putin is upset.
But some here say it's a game of Cold War-style brinkmanship.
He wants to be treated like a great leader. He wants Russia to be treated like a great power. That's what he wants.
And he's using Ukraine as a pawn in a game of chess to get what he wants.
Absolutely. And he thinks that if he shows his power in here, if he shows violence in here, in Ukraine, Western leaders can say, well, okay, we should deal with Putin and should treat him like we used to treat Soviet Union and communist leaders.
The U.S. is training Ukraine's frontline soldiers, supplying nearly $500 million in military assistance last year, including anti-tank missiles. In two phone calls with Putin last month, President Biden threatened Moscow with more sanctions if Russia invades, but says he will not send American troops.
So it's down here.
In Ukraine's capital, Kyiv, they've renovated old bomb shelters in case of attack.
It's a manually operated air filtration system.
This one was built during the Cold War, when Ukraine was part of the Soviet Union, and ironically, America was the enemy. Back on the front line, they want no part of a new Russian empire, even if it means the ultimate sacrifice.
All my soldiers in this time ready for battle.
You're all ready to die.
Yes.
To save Ukraine from a Russian invasion.
Not only all my soldiers.
For CBS Mornings, Holly Williams in eastern Ukraine.
This morning, Bob Saget's fans and fellow comedians are mourning the man and performer that they all loved. The longtime star of Full House and America's Funniest Home Videos was found dead in his hotel room in Orlando yesterday. Now, Saget had just done a pair of comedy shows over the weekend and even posted on Instagram saying this, that he was loving every minute of it. Police say they found no signs of drug use or foul play. Saget was only 65 years old. CBS News contributor Jamie Wax spoke with him many times in recent years about comedy, love, and life.
Hi, it's time now for This Week in History.
Bob Saget's rapid rise to stardom actually started in news.
F.W. Woolworth was born. He had two sisters who were 5 and 10.
Not as a newsman, but as an in-house comedian on the morning program on this network in 1987. The show didn't last a year.
I was there 5 months, and then next thing I knew, I was fired, and then I got the job on Full House.
As beloved widowed dad Danny Tanner to three young girls, Saget soon became a household name.
Girls, I am taking all three of you out for Father-Daughter Day.
2 years later, he was the first host of America's Funniest Home Videos and the star of two top-rated primetime shows.
When you look back at your life, it's like you've had multiple careers, right?
I mean, I'm having them right now.
Saget was born in Philadelphia in 1956. After graduating from Temple University, he moved to Los Angeles and became a fixture in comedy clubs, where he was known for raunchy sets.
But we made these children, my wife and I. We actually made...
As a regular on the stand-up circuit, Saget continued to draw from those early days, injecting risque, profanity-filled material, free from the squeaky clean image he projected on TV.
Everything below my belt is safe. So
new generations heard only his voice as the narrator on How I Met Your Mother.
I'm going to tell you an incredible story.
And knew him as a recurring Danny Tanner on Fuller House.
Now, Bob Saget transcended generations. So older comics, younger comics, everyone in the middle loved Bob Saget.
Offstage, Saget worked tirelessly to raise attention and millions of dollars to fight scleroderma after losing his sister to the rare tissue disease.
Humor is the only way my family survived.
Mm-hmm. Saget spoke to CBS's Dr. John LaPook last month after his loss.
It is so healthy to laugh, and I'm out there doing it, and I know it's healing for people.
For CBS Mornings, I'm Jamie Wax.
Wow. I mean,
this one was a shock.
It was a shock. 65 is not old.
No, not at all. I mean, you know, we'd heard about Betty White and heard about Sidney Poitier, but you say 99 and 94. It's sad, but you're not totally surprised. This one was really, really shocking to me. I saw an interview with somebody who was at his show Saturday night, who said he was in great form, that he didn't cough at all. And it's interesting that now a cough has become like, he didn't cough at all, he didn't drink any water, and that he worked the whole time. Was saying what a great time he was having.
Yeah. And the outpouring of messages of loss, saying he's the nicest and funniest comedian working the last 30 years is amazing.
I think there's a level of respect. Some comedians get the big break, others work for it. And he worked tirelessly and beat on his craft to be one of the more respected comedians in the business.
Yeah.
Everybody that worked with him loved him. Yeah.
Stephen Colbert here to tell you about the Late Show Pod Show, which is our podcast for the Late Show with my producer, Becca. Becca, how long have you been producing this podcast?
I've been producing this podcast for 2 years now.
And your favorite thing about it?
The extended moments, for sure.
Right, because sometimes I'll interview like a big star for 25 minutes, and we can only put like 14 minutes on air. Where can people get that?
On the Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert, wherever you get your podcasts.
And who produces that?
I help out. It's a team effort.